Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yeez Woo Heap, coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Voting is underway this week in Sudan's Darfur region on a controversial referendum over whether to unify Darfur's five states into a single administrative unit. The exclusion of voters displaced by fighting since 2003 has many questioning the credibility of the poll.
And that's VOA's Jill Craig reporting from Nairobi. Details coming up.
Also, more than 5,000 homes and cultivated fields in Burundi have been destroyed by El Nino-related weather events. And the Nigerian terror group Boko Haram is increasingly using school-aged girls to carry out suicide attacks.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, the Nigerian terror group Boko Haram is increasingly using school-aged girls to carry out suicide attacks. The UN Children's Fund said in a report today that the number of children used as suicide bombers has increased tenfold in the past year, and more than three-quarters of those children have been girls. Chris Stein has more from Abuja.
The UN Children's Fund says one out of every five suicide bombers in the countries battling Boko Haram is now a child. UNICEF's Nigeria spokesperson, Dune Porter, says those children are victims, not perpetrators.
In 2014, there were four children used in so-called suicide bombings. And in 2015, there were 44 children. It's an appalling statistic. Deceiving children and forcing them to carry out these deadly acts is one of the most horrific aspects of the violence in northeast Nigeria and in neighboring countries.
Nearly all of those attacks have been in Cameroon and Nigeria, and most of the children involved have been girls. Thursday will mark the two-year anniversary of the mass abduction of the 219 girls from their dormitory in the northeastern town of Chibok. None of those girls have been found, but activists say the Chibok girls are just the tip of the iceberg. In a report Tuesday, Human Rights Watch said Boko Haram has kidnapped over 2,000 people, many of them women and girls, including other students. HRW's Nigeria researcher, Mauzi Sagun.
Teenage boys, men have been targeted for killing or recruitment by the insurgents, while the female child has been deterred from attending school by the fear and the prospect of abductions. As it happened with the Chibok schoolgirls, Boko Haram has in fact used that as a threat to intimidate female students from attending school, writing letters and throwing them in schools and telling them that if they attended, they will be taken away, like the Chibok girls.
Women and girls freed from Boko Haram say militants use them as sex slaves or force them to assist in operations. But UNICEF says the increased use of girls to carry bombs means these former captives are being met with suspicion and stigma. As Nigerian and regional troops have ramped up pressure on Boko Haram in the past year, pushing them out of towns and villages, militants have returned to a strategy of hit-and-run attacks. The number of suicide bombings is on the rise in general. Nigeria's defense spokesman, General Rabe Abubakar, says using children is just one of the group's strategies.
Some people will even come disguising as madmen. You see them, madmen, trying to get access to a crowd in order to blow up themselves. We saw a situation where some people came looking for water to perform ablution. This was them to end off blowing other people when they get access to the crowd. We saw a recent time where men or women disguised as men wearing turban for them to get access to mosques and detonate their bombs.
Boko Haram's now seven-year insurgency has killed 20,000 people and displaced more than 2 million. Boko Haram set out to impose strict Islamic law in northern Nigeria. That is include waging war on Western education. HRW said Tuesday that Boko Haram has killed 611 teachers since 2009. Attacks have destroyed or shut down over 2,000 schools, robbing nearly 1 million children of access to education in the Northeast. Chris Stein for VOA News, Maiduguri.
The number of pirate attacks has significantly escalated in the Gulf of Guinea this year, in contrast to what is being termed a remarkable decline in maritime crime elsewhere in the world. VOA correspondent Steve Herman reports from our Southeast Asia Bureau in Bangkok.
Attacks against oil pipelines and facilities ashore around the Niger Delta escalated in the first 3 months of 2016. And that is deterring major international companies from investing in the region for fear of suffering huge financial and logistical losses, according to a just-released report. Ian Millen is the chief executive officer of the Dryad Maritime Consultancy in London.
It's simple, it's effective, it's profitable, and it's low risk. The pirates there are even doing this in the daylight now, and they operate with almost impunity.
There have been 14 attacks on commercial vessels off Nigeria's rivers and Bayelsa states. However, 8 of the raids were thwarted by crews taking evasive maneuvers. But in the 6 which succeeded, a total of 23 crew members were kidnapped for ransom. According to the Dryad report, European and American seafarers remain the most lucrative kidnap and ransom targets. Millen gives VOA a mixed prognostication for the months ahead for the northernmost part of the tropical Atlantic.
In the Gulf of Guinea, the worrying trend is that we will probably see a lot more kidnap. The good news is that we'll probably see a lot less of product tanker hijack.
Nigeria's Navy has not been very responsive and lacks the effectiveness to confront the pirates, according to analysts. During the first quarter of this year, only 13 maritime crime cases were reported in Southeast Asia, compared to 35 for the same period last year, according to the global report by Dryad Maritime. So far, Jakarta is the only Southeast Asian port where more than one incident has been reported this year. Maritime crime throughout the rest of the world continues to decline, with just 15 incidents reported to Dryad in the first quarter of the year. The majority of these cases, 8 incidents, have been attacks on yachts in the Caribbean. Steve Herman, VOA News, Bangkok.
In related news, the Nigerian Navy says pirates kidnapped 6 Turkish crew members from an oil tanker in the Gulf of Guinea yesterday. The vessel, named Puli, was boarded by pirates about 145 kilometers off the Nigerian coast. It's expected they will ask for ransom. The Puli is owned by an Istanbul-based shipping company.
Voting is underway this week in Sudan's Darfur region on a controversial referendum over whether to unify Darfur's 5 states into a single administrative unit. The exclusion of voters displaced by fighting since 2003 has many questioning the credibility of the poll. VOA's Jill Craig has more from Nairobi.
Sudan's government has carved up the Darfur region twice, in 1994 and 2012, creating 5 states there. Khartoum is in favor of preserving the status quo. But proponents of unification say it will give Darfur more autonomy and influence, addressing a key driver of conflict since 2003. Rebel groups have long said Darfur is economically and politically marginalized, as well as facing daily insecurity. Still, many in Darfur say they aren't voting this week. This man lives in Al-Fashir, the capital of North Darfur state.
I don't see, people are enthusiastic, that to vote. It seems that, that referendum is a boycott by majority of the people in Darfur.
The government says internally displaced persons, or IDPs, living in Darfur will be able to vote. However, people displaced outside the region or the country are not eligible. According to the government, 3.5 million people are registered to vote. Analysts dispute that number, citing wide discrepancies in the past between government and UN figures on IDPs. The United States says voter registration in IDP camps was inadequate and that the poll cannot be considered credible and will undermine Darfur's peace process. And some of the rebels, who are boycotting due to ongoing fighting, say while the displaced are being excluded, the government is mobilizing its supporters in the larger towns to vote. Bushar Manago is with the Mini Manawi faction of the Sudan Liberation Movement Army.
How you can conduct this referendum? More than 3 million people in IDP camps and refugees, and the war is still going on. The people, no freedoms of expression.
An additional 138,000 people have fled their homes since mid-January because of renewed fighting between government troops and rebel forces loyal to Abdul Wahid. Sudan's information minister, Ahmed Bilal Osman, told VOA's Daybreak Africa that his government is upholding one of the terms of the 2011 peace agreement by organizing the referendum. But John Hirsch, a policy analyst at the Enough Project, a Washington-based atrocity prevention policy group, disagrees.
It's really unclear to me how following through on a peace agreement that, you know, is widely considered illegitimate as well is going to do anything to move the situation forward.
Many consider that peace deal to be incomprehensive and poorly implemented. Rosalind Marsden is an associate fellow at Chatham House and a former British ambassador to Sudan.
For the government, what they hope is to send a signal that by holding the referendum, the conflict in Darfur is over. And I think they then hope that they will be able to say the time has come to close the camps for the internally displaced people and that UNAMID, the UN African Union peacekeeping mission, should leave. But those who feel that Darfur is still very insecure are very concerned that the referendum could in fact raise tensions.
The UN says more than 300,000 people have died in Darfur since 2003, when rebels there launched a rebellion citing discrimination and marginalization. The government responded by forming militias known as the Janjaweed that caused chaos in the region. Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir is wanted by the International Criminal Court for charges of crimes against humanity, war crimes, and genocide in Darfur. Polling in the referendum ends Wednesday. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 17 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. The Nigerian terror group Boko Haram is increasingly using school-aged girls to carry out suicide attacks. More than 5,000 homes and cultivated fields in Burundi have been destroyed by El Nino-related weather events. And voting is underway this week in Sudan's Darfur region on a controversial referendum over whether to unify Darfur's five states into a single administrative unit. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
The Associated Press reports the Italian foreign minister arrived in Tripoli today. He's the first European official sent to Libya to endorse a UN-backed unity government. Paolo Gentiloni was welcomed by deputies of Fayez Sarraj, the chairman of the Government of National Accords Presidential Council. The country has been split by two rival governments and a number of armed militias since the overthrow of Muammar Gaddafi in 2011.
The World Bank says economic growth in Africa last year slowed to its lowest level since 2009. The bank's Africa Plus report says this year's growth will be subdued. VOA's Jody Capua reports.
The report says gross domestic product, or GDP growth, averaged 3% in 2015. That's down from 4.5% the year before. Poonam Chuanpol is the World Bank's acting chief economist for the Africa region and the lead author of the Africa Pulse report. She says sub-Saharan Africa faced quite a difficult situation in 2015 with what she calls external headwinds.
Especially the decline in commodity prices and also the slowing down of global growth and tightening of financial markets dampened growth in sub-Saharan Africa.
The plunge in commodity prices included the plummeting price of oil, down 67% from June 2014 to December 2015.
Oil is very important for the region, and it's not just oil, it's also other commodities, metals and minerals, because Sub-Saharan Africa is a net exporter of commodities, and there was a dramatic drop in commodity prices, which had implications for export earnings, but also importantly for fiscal revenues.
Such commodities make up the bulk of the region's exports. Paul says domestic problems also added to slower growth.
The domestic conditions are electricity shortages in a number of countries, including South Africa, Zambia, and there was the impact of severe drought in several countries, which impacted agricultural production, for example, in Botswana, which was also hit by a decline in demand for diamonds. In some countries, political uncertainty has affected growth, and in others, it's also security concerns, heightened security concerns.
The World Bank Africa Pulse report also says more countries had fiscal deficits, which piled up debt. Poll says it's been a long time since Africa has seen a growth rate as low as 3%.
It's also very important to note that this low rate was last seen in the region in 2009, when average GDP growth for the region was about the same level. And also this level is well below the robust growth rates that the region enjoyed in the pre-financial crisis period of 2003-08, when growth averaged about 6.8% a year.
However, there were bright spots on the continent.
Some countries have actually managed to sustain robust levels of growth. For example, Cote d'Ivoire, but also countries like Rwanda and Kenya, Tanzania and Ethiopia.
The report says moderate growth is also expected for Ghana, with improved investor sentiment, new oil fields, and the easing of the electricity crisis. The World Bank's acting chief economist for the Africa region says many countries should undertake structural reforms, including diversifying their economies.
I think that's very important because we've seen that countries have relied increasingly on commodity exports, and that makes them vulnerable to movements in commodity prices. So diversifying sources of growth would help to build resilience of these countries and find new drivers of growth. And for this, they need to undertake structural reforms that would improve the competitiveness and productivity in the region.
The overall African GDP growth for 2016 is forecast to be just 3.3%. It's expected to improve in 2017-2018 with a growth rate of 4.5%. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
In other economic news, the International Monetary Fund is warning the global economy is under threat from weak growth and rising support for protectionism. It also warns of severe damage to the global economy if Britain decides to leave the European Union. The IMF describes the global economy as sluggish and has lowered its growth forecast for the third straight quarter to 3.2%.
More than 5,000 homes and thousands of hectares of cultivated fields in Burundi have been destroyed by El Niño-related weather events such as heavy rains, floods, and drought. The International Federation of the Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies has launched an emergency appeal to donors. Moses Javier Amana reports from Bujumbura.
The International Federation of the Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies reports damage across 15 of 18 provinces in Burundi, saying families are affected by the multiple emergencies. Remy is a farmer in Bubanza province.
Ni tatizo sana juu mvua inakuwa kwa wingi wala inakosekana.
Remy says he is currently facing a big problem because of the heavy rains and searing heat and dry weather that have affected the plantations, and they have no hope of harvesting what they once cultivated.
Hakuna mawazo yote iko juu hakuna wasaidizi. Tunakosa wasaidizi.
He says that they don't have any hope since no one is helping them. Isaac Nzintunga is the advisor of the Ministry of Agriculture for Food Security in Burundi. He says other problems are making matters worse.
Imports. In terms of food, imports are decreasing. Most of our people is agriculturalists. They are small farmers. That's why if they are affected, they not have many solutions to survive. They need help in terms of food assistance.
He also says there is no social safety net for farmers.
We don't have agricultural insurance, which is very needed now, faced against the climate change. Because sometimes the water deficit, sometimes there is a lot of rain.
The International Federation of the Red Cross says it will work with the local Burundi Red Cross to provide shelter, health care, and household supplies to at least 100,000 people over the next 6 months. Political turmoil and violence in Burundi has contributed to humanitarian needs. Violence broke out a year ago after President Pierre Nkurunziza ran for a third term, which opponents called unconstitutional. Since then, hundreds have been killed. The Red Cross says about 80,000 people are displaced within Burundi, while 250,000 have fled the country. It also says malaria cases are on the rise, and cholera, which is endemic to Burundi, is also reported along the eastern shores of Lake Tanganyika and the Burundi-Tanzanian border. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
The World Health Organization says today 21 people have died of yellow fever in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Reuters news agency says some of the deaths resulted from infections contracted in neighboring Angola. The WHO announced 225 yellow fever deaths in Angola 1 week ago. The Angola health minister has said at least 505 cases of the disease were confirmed since December. WHO says at least 1.5 million doses are needed to vaccinate an anti-risk population in Angola's Luanda province. About 200,000 cases of yellow fever occur worldwide each year. Most deaths occur in Africa. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehia Swuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. And please stay tuned for the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the International Criminal Court and African leaders, as well as ICC's ruling on Kenya's Deputy President William Ruto. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
Can't get enough of the sunny side of sports? Well, we've solved that problem. We now have a half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. So visit voanews.com for more details. and enjoy the show.
Voice of America.